Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you for coming. I'll give you a bit of insight of who I am, where I'm coming from. Then I'm going to show some examples, talk about AI in generative AI, so creative AI. I was just curious, who here has a software background? Anybody? Yeah? So you actually understand AI at a level that some of us don't?
A bit.
Yeah. So I'm going to oversimplify some concepts just for the sake of argument. But if I make some fundamental mistakes, just please raise your hand. Feel free to correct me. My background is digital artist. I've also done a little bit of coding, so I've worked with software for 25 years now this year. So I am very familiar with software concepts, and I've worked with software engineers for 25 years. But I'm not a coder myself, so I try to oversimplify things for myself so that I can have a conversation with a real software engineer. That's about the extent of my knowledge, but I think it might be useful for some discussion. Anybody else work with graphics or graphic design or anything like that? No? Well, I'm going to try and keep it sort of interesting for everybody, and I will give a little demonstration in between and give some considerations. What you're going to see today are some of my thoughts. I haven't really finalized my conclusions. I'm just going to present with you what I see, and at the end of the presentation, I'll kind of summarize or highlight some opinions about this stuff now. And the main theme for today really is how AI that's creating stuff, and how we are using it to create stuff, and what do we think about that? I'm going to start with a little movie. It's a silent movie of an artist creating an image. So let me let you take a look. And this is digitally hand-drawn. So this is a physical drawing of a painting, kind of, but with digital tools, not with paint. But it resembles the same way of setting up a painting, and it leads into our discussion. That's where it differs with normal painting. You can't just scale the head afterwards. but that's the advantage of working in digital layers. But you can see how it resembles sort of a layer-by-layer approach, which is really as old as paintings are. But it's cool to see it done. This is a digital artist, Sonja. She's Dutch. She works in the game industry. She works as a concept artist and as a graphic artist for games. And it leads into some of the stuff I will show you down the road. So this is her daily profession, and she draws this a Wacom tablet, you know, on the computer. It's connected, or she does it on the iPad with a pencil. I've called this the AI and the art of digital creation, and I'll give you a bit of a background. This is not about AI taking over the world. This is simply about AI taking over Bob Ross. So it's a little bit about, I want to make the area of discussion a little smaller. It's really about creation. I thought this image was kind of funny, so I just thought I'd share this with you. And in simple terms, really, it's AI that's used to create stuff that normally we do ourselves. In this case, text, images, video, and other things. So that's what we mean today by generative AI. My background is industrial design degree in Eindhoven, creative school. I fell in love with 3D graphics to help me visualize some of my ideas, but it became a field of itself. So in the 90s, this stuff was new. So I worked as a digital artist following this degree. I here used mathematical formulas to generate furniture concepts in 3D. And I had a background in engineering as well, so that was sort of my math from those engineering years kind of combined with some design. And this stuff got me a job in the game industry, and I worked as a digital artist on PC games, PlayStation, and cell phone games. And I've always liked the visual aspect of you know, screens and play with it, and I designed some of these games, and I worked together with a coder, always with somebody who's an expert in writing algorithms for games. I also have a background surrounded by artists. So this is Henk Helmonte. He's a living contemporary artist who paints in the style of the 17th century oil paintings. I think he works with about 20 plus layers of paint. So he also builds up stuff from scratch. I've seen him pencil. I've seen some of his sketches that he then adds layers and layers and layers to it. And so I've been surrounded by real artists all my youth. Another one is Jan van Loon, who was also our neighbor for a while. He had a different style, but also a contemporary artist making beautiful stuff. Right now I run an incubation space, a building in Utrecht where a lot of games companies, and we help game entrepreneurs with the first steps in game entrepreneurship. And so I'm kind of surrounded by young, savvy digital people. And so even though I don't use everything myself anymore, I do hear a lot and I see a lot, and it's kind of an interesting place to be working. Games are kind of a marriage between coding and arts, and here it is graphics, but also music, storytelling, user design, game design, and then the business. And it's an interesting mix of all sorts of disciplines into one team. It's one of the most versatile products that you can imagine. And people come in here from very different backgrounds. So people might have a computer science degree, people might have an art degree, and they're working together on creative products. So to simplify that, the designers are the conceptual, this is the coding, and the artistic, and the entrepreneur. So it's quite a versatile group. So this is the area that I'm from, and this is how I kind of evaluate this topic today that kind of took us by storm. Just before we continue into that, besides graphics that you see in the game, there are whole teams who create art purely used for the game team to build the world. So there are people who have a full-time job is it to make cool images inside the game studio to inspire the team who builds the graphics. So Sonja is one of them. This is artwork drawn at Guerrilla Studios in Amsterdam. They have 25 people doing this full time. And they draw this in similar style as you saw early. And then the team takes this and then they start building the game. This work often doesn't even leave the studio. So it often is not even seen by anyone else but the studio people. And also this is how they design the characters before they are built in the game. And this is done an example of the character in the game. Usually you follow the character when you're playing, and this is all 3D generated, inspired by that artwork. So that's a specific topic of art that we can touch on a little bit later. Now, AI has been around for a long time in software. It's a software technique, really. But last few years, it's become kind of a public thing because there have been all sorts of tools that you and I can all just access and play with and create stuff. And that sort of triggered a whole new, avalanche of AI solutions. And that kind of raises some questions that are interesting. So these tools, who's played with ChatGPT? Yeah, so you guys have an experience with that. Has anybody played with the visual tools as well? Yeah. So ChatGPT is about text. It creates text based on your input, and it's been trained by text. And DALL-E and Midjourney are tools that create images based on text. And they've been fed lots of data on the image side. But if you just look at some websites asking what is out there now, generative AI, these are all tools. to create stuff, images, code. So for software developers, basically AI creating code for them so that they can focus on more on sort of the overall design of the code rather than every script that they've written or every text, every line of code. You have speech, other, 3D. So it's all very taken by storm. So it's kind of overwhelming, really. There's so much out there. So today I'm going to just focus mostly on the images and a little bit about the text. I'll just give you an example for those of you who...
Imagine if you could speak 8 languages fluently and connect with billions more people around the world.
So this is his British accent. This is the real accent of the guy. Then he goes to the American accent.
Make it possible. Let me demonstrate.
The AI reads this movie and then changes it in other languages and also changes his lips. So basically, this guy doesn't speak Spanish, but it looks like he does. And so theoretically, that means that if we watch the news, we could even switch to our preferred language, and it looks like the person in question actually...
That's been crazy.
So, this is just wow. Okay, so this is the kind of stuff that we're being confronted with. And I heard from Arthur that the Portuguese accent was good, right? Yeah.
Get there. It's perfect.
Anyway. Then we've seen these. We know that, you know, they can map the face of Tom Cruise on a guy that has a similar profile. I do notice that when they make these, they usually pick an actor that has a similar build and a similar shaped face, because it's really about the sort of the oval within the boundaries of the face where they can do all the magic. But because there's so much image, so much video available of Tom Cruise, the AI can sort of read that and sort of map it back onto, so if he starts speaking like Tom Cruise, then they can make him say stuff that he never did. And that's the same with some of you have seen those. This is where it gets a bit scary, of course, when the world leaders start saying stuff that they never did. That is fascinating. On the one hand, I find it extremely cool and interesting, and at the same time, it's very scary, right? Because because two things happen. One is, how do I trust what he said is actually true? But it also means that real videos become suspicious as well. Like if somebody really does say something, everybody's like, "Oh, that's AI." So that raises a question. I'm not going to be able to answer today. But this is really what tools are capable of. On the other hand, by reading radiology reports and analyzing chest X-rays, the percentage of successful finding of cancer or diseases that you have to read, the success rate of AI is 25% higher than of certain human doctors. So it can be useful as well. You know, it serves a purpose. And I have to just say, AI is a software technique. It's not something magical. It's a technique to analyze and to improve software based on a lot of data. At the same time, it looks like magic. So this is a famous science fiction writer. And right now, in the beginning, while we're still analyzing it, especially for people who don't have a software background, it really does look like magic. Basics of how it works. This is me as a layman knowing a little bit about... I'm just going to use a few... just a few definitions. It's kind of dropping off the... It's a little... Yeah, it needs to be tiny smaller.
Just move the wall.
Yeah, that's right. So, basically, an algorithm is kind of like a recipe. It's a process that a computer runs through. And that is the foundation of software. So you write algorithms, there's a lot of math involved. And software has been around, of course, since the 60s. And it's just improved over time. So basically, it's like a brownie recipe. You know, it runs through a process of instructions and it produces something. And then artificial intelligence is sort of the one of the definitions is basically computer systems starting to perform things that we normally do. And it's meant to be, you know, as a tool.
and you could, that example of languages was basically what this is about. Machine learning is where a computer system learns.
So you can train a software on data and instructions. And that's kind of interesting. And that's where computers are really good at. They're fast. They're not smart. Trust me. Computers can do very dumb things. But they are very fast. And if you instruct computers well, that's when you can get them to work for you. And to basically simplify the... It's basically you can design an algorithm, then train it on data. And with data, I mean either lots of text. Like if you can make ChatGPT, I think, read everything up to 2022 online and in libraries and public information books that were publicly available. And then it trains sort of an algorithm, and ChatGPT is a language model. So basically it's based on language. So it statistically predicts the language sentences, and you can have it learn, have a train model, and use it to create results. When it's about images, then you can have a program train on existing images, and then you can help it produce images based on all the learning. So you're basically teaching a piece of software to improve itself. At least that's the idea. And that doesn't always happen. ChatGPT also makes a lot of mistakes. We shouldn't confuse ChatGPT with Google, because Google helps you find sources online. ChatGPT actually interprets stuff and tells you what it is. And in that interpretation, there's sometimes something goes wrong. That's why ChatGPT is something that needs to be verified. There are some things that ChatGPT is really useful. Like if I want instructions on how to do an Excel sheet, or I've actually helped me write a cover letter, I would put my cover letter that I wrote in ChatGPT and ask him to make a better version, and then it would produce different versions. And then I didn't like fully what it did, but I liked some of the sentences it used, and so that's how I use it. But yeah, it can write all documents for you, and that's where you have to be careful what it does. Another graphic I found, which is similar to the one I showed you before, is basically you train a system, and then the system might help you improve certain processes that you're doing. I think what here is the example that's still kind of helpful. In 1997, this computer beat, the world champion at the time, Deep Blue. And basically what it did was, they fed the computer every chess game that had been played so far that was recorded. And the computer would know with every setting what the statistical best way next move was. It would process quickly through all the data that it had been fed, and it would give you the probability of the best move. Basically, what AI does is it gives you a statistical chance. So it's always based on statistics. It's basically a mathematical prediction. It's the wisest move to move the horse now to that. Based on thousands of matches that we've loaded in by masters, and you know, in chess they've already created books with steps and all the matches of people, and so they fed it. And it's so fast that it does that quicker than the human. And that's what it kind of proved. It proved that the computer was faster at data processing. But we shouldn't confuse it with a real human mind. And that's where it gets a little tricky. It's basically what I just said. I do know that they are dumb, and they also have no soul. It is a mechanical process, so we should never forget that it's a mechanical simulation created by us. Yeah? So AI is created by us, and you know, we need to hold on to the reins here. Now, it's interesting how it's controlled by text input. So the AI that we just discussed, ChatGPT, Midjourney, are controlled by text input. And that's kind of interesting. So you basically give it instructions in a prompt, and then it will start creating something based on those keywords. So let's do a little demonstration. Anybody here who has played with Midjourney? Anybody here? No? Let me give you a... Oh, I'm not starting Apple TV. No. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do a crazy little instruction.
And I'm going to say, imagine. And then I give it a Dutch landscape with spaceships, which is weird, in 17th century style oil painting Vermeer. It's just a bit of a weird contrast, doesn't make any sense. So let's see what starts happening. So this program starts creating something based on these words. So when they scan all the images, they have the images all tagged with all sorts of words connected to the images that it has read. And that's how it learns how to connect words with images. So now you can see it's starting to draw. And it starts with a blur, and it's and it narrows down on a sort of... Now, I have no idea what the outcome is. This is not Google. So this is creating something. And you can see right now we're at 93%. And there it is. Okay. Now, let's take a look at what it created. Okay. It didn't get the spaceships part, or did it? There's something, but that's interesting because it does try to make them look like something the Leonardo da Vinci made. It's not like glossy metal ships, but it has flying ships, which is kind of interesting. The rest looks like a lot of paintings that we may have seen. And you can see how it gives me four options, and I can sort of iterate on the one that I liked most. And here there's something weird going on here. It's like it's trying to do something with my prompt. And so yeah, it's pretty crazy. I was what's that?
Bottom right is the best one.
Yeah, because that has the most options. Okay, shall we do one iteration on that one? Hang on, let me so we can do a variation on four. So let's see what it comes up with. So this program has been fed millions of images. Millions. And
I have a little question. You're making an iteration? So
yeah.
What does it do now? How does it improve itself?
Well, it gave me four outings or created outputs. Okay. And now I'm telling it which one I like best.
Yeah.
And then it probably varied a little bit with those four on the instructions it gave it. And now I'm telling it that I like the instructions you did here. Let's expand on that.
So he looks at the parameters of the four paintings maybe and then see where's the difference.
Yeah, because here it did flying ships, which you didn't do here.
Yeah, so
it probably knows the user likes flying ships. Let's expand on that. So let's see what it comes up with now. See, now there's all flying or mostly flying ships. Yeah. And that's also weird. What's the stuff in the background here? It's like, what is that? It's sort of almost more industrial looking.
Yeah.
And here's flying ships. Yeah, so everyone has flying ships now. So I guess that's one of the sort of ways you can control the outcome. But I like how it wants to maintain the 17th century style. So somehow it knows not to put a metal flying ship in it, which is kind of cool. So let's try another one. Anybody here? What's your favorite artist?
Picasso?
All right. Wow.
Something crazy is coming.
I was going to do something with... I've been playing
something
with...
normal, because Picasso is crazy.
Shall I do interior design with Picasso?
Yeah.
And maybe a famous person?
Well, we talked about Taylor Swift today.
Huh?
Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift. Okay, hang on. So... Okay, so we said Picasso. Oh, sorry, my Picasso interior design. Taylor Swift. I have no idea if this. So because this, what I'm doing now, is what we do prompting, and you call it prompt engineering, actually. This has become a skill in itself. So the order of the way we instruct it, so I may get completely not what I wanted, but then I may have to change things around and create another version. Okay, this is going to be interesting. You can already see Taylor popping up.
Not sure about the Picasso.
No.
Because oh, haha.
There is a Picasso.
Now it does it in the background. Oh. See, so this is where it gets interesting. It's like, what do you want me to do? If I would do, okay, it's still it's interesting. Let's take a look.
They're quite different.
Yeah. So it has different approaches. Here it's trying to do something with the image itself. Here it's the background.
Yeah.
Here it's, yeah, it's a bit, you know, because here it goes into the word interior, I think, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
If I make it more clear, if I say, look, if I just say, how about this? Imagine, let's start with Taylor Swift. Say if we make it more constrained towards making her in a Picasso style, see if it picks up on that. Now, what's happening is some people are doing 400 images a day, and it's not just it's artists, but it's also amateurs, people who just find it fun, and it's even becoming almost like a mental exercise, something to do personally, which not even about the, here I'm not so sure. Okay, the left one that has the most sort of Picasso thing. Let me just see if we can iterate on that one. But I mean, Picasso of course gets really abstract, so then the face of Taylor Swift wouldn't even be recognized, maybe one eye or something. Okay, now it starts to iterate on that a little bit. So that was a good example. It's an extreme example. Now, I also, as some of you know, I wanted to play with this one. I wanted to see if it knew Francis Schaeffer, the theologian. I do add theologian, so that increases the chances of finding the right Francis Schaeffer. Yeah. Oh, the light's coming in quite.
You come this way.
Yeah, sometimes it reaches out the result. So let's see. Oh. Now, this is generated. So these are not pictures found online. These are generated, but it does look like him. People who know him here, it does look like him. Yeah. It's that kind of, I think.
The top left looks like Thanos from the Avengers.
Down right.
Yeah. So now we know that Mitch really knows who he is, right? So that's interesting. Okay. So now I'm gonna do a crazy one. I'm gonna create a prompt that says, hang on. Francis Schaeffer discussing theology with Star Wars characters,
yes.
Norman Rockwell style. Let's see. You like that, huh?
Yeah,
so this is kind of where the fun is. It's where you're making crazy combinations, and concept artists do that too. Sometimes their director will say, "I want Star Wars characters. I want some theologian. I want this and that." But it takes a long time for them to create stuff. So here you see sort of a way to come into a quick result, and it loves to combine. It's great to combine crazy things. Well, look at that.
Yeah.
Look at that. I'll send you the images, Arthur. You can have them printed. Now, where did Francis Schaeffer go? I'm not so sure. There's guys with beards, very clearly. But I'm not really impressed with... So I don't recognize Francis Schaeffer as much anymore.
No.
And this is where it gets to. I like the style. It does look like Norman Rockwell. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has very clearly the way he uses light and some of his brush strokes. So let me do another one where since we're here, also a lot of people I grew up with. Lord of the Rings. So,
oh, yeah.
Let's see theology with Gandalf. And I didn't specify style. So I'm kind of curious what it's going to come up with. If I say photorealistic, it will make it look like a photo. And I think if I name well-known styles, it will use that. Mm. So this is kind of funny, fun, but some of these are nice enough to put on the wall. So what does this mean for artists? Like, for example, some of this stuff looks already better than some hotel art that I've seen. And I can imagine people just having this printed and put it in a hotel. Maybe not this one, but I'll show you a few examples of... Mm. Oh, it's funny. Now they're all wearing hats. Yeah. Actually, Schaefer and Gandalf, they have similar faces, maybe. So now it's getting a little confusing. And I do recognize some of the actors. But anyway, so you can see how there's lots of ways so this is the demonstration. I'll show you with something a little bit more about what other people have made with it. So Albert Einstein, Crazy Laugh, Unreal Engine Ultra Realistic. So this is created by one of those tools. London in a fish tank. I kind of like this one because it came up with such crazy things. Like, I love the magic of this. And it's created in the same way. And this is where I struggle with, because I love this cool stuff, but what does this mean for artists? What does this mean anyway, we'll talk about it in a minute. Here, crazy idea. Reality where we colonized alien worlds, but then 100 years earlier than we did. If we ever did, but, and I kind of, it's like, okay, so it's like these beautiful, the lighting is exactly like old photographs from the 20s, and then these weird, bizarre spaceships in the background, and they're just casually... I also love the casual setting. It's like, it's so normal in a sense. That's what makes it so... And then, these explorers just, standing in front of a very dangerous creature. But also, it's also beautiful. I mean, again, I could print this and put it on the wall. So, and then it's also good at designing stuff. So basically, technological equipment for listening to images. I mean, what's that all about? And so then it comes with this. So basically, based on these prompts, it creates stuff that are interesting for a discussion about something rather. A nose, a thing that actually creates smell when you're reading. So when you're reading about the Shire, maybe it gives you a smell of horse manure and something else. I don't know. But I love how it also creates the packages. It's mind-boggling. And this one is hilarious. Something to help you blink. Which is ridiculous. But look how polished it looks. And a perfect box design, and it understands exploded views. And then I love this one, because this actually could work. And somebody designed this, but Lego might get the idea. It's like, hey, this is actually kind of cool. It fits with how we like to make stuff. It's not completely accurate. This doesn't really look like Lego, but it's... But it, as a whole, it's perfect for a design discussion.
Good inspiration.
Yeah, and some crazy things, of course, instead of bulls. I love this one on the right. It's sort of very funny.
It's like a Spanish in Spain.
Yeah. It's a Spanish setting. But I also love bodybuilders on tricycles. I mean, it's just crazy. It's very funny. Yeah. So, and then, but here you can see how it gets confused, right? It doesn't really know how to finish the body in that darker space. So here's where you see the weakness. And in the beginning, the early versions, they also had 6 or 7 fingers, so it was sort of... but they keep training it until it gets more accurate. But I love these guys. I mean, it's just so funny. But also people creating art with it. And I don't know what prompts they use to get this, but this is what some people are creating with it, just based on feeding it words. And a really long prompt. So you can write really long prompts, and it will make something. So the result of this prompt apparently was this setting. And so it takes time. So people are mastering this. It's becoming a new craft, interestingly enough. And this one struck me as well. Basically, because it's so current, and it visualized Jesus among the Palestinians and caring for them. And here's another one. based on that same prompt. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting how people are also using this to process current affairs, in a sense. And Line Art, Soho, New York. So it can do styles, it can do different things. This is not bad for even using it for a children's book or a story. Quite cool. Then I also asked it to do Henk Helmontel juice blender. and it creates this. So it apparently knows Helmontel. It has seen his work. Helmontel doesn't use these colors as vibrantly. This is not his, he's more sedated. But it is still kind of interesting. And I love how it sort of, again, tries to make it look like in the 17th century there was a blender. This looks more like a machine, but that looks more like something hand-operated. So it comes up with funny stuff. Again, this is done in minutes. So that's what's mind-boggling about it. I have to say that when I was reading, think about this, I was struck by how God in Genesis gives a command, right? He doesn't create, doesn't say God created life, he says God said, let there be life. I'm not implying that he was using AI, but I did think it was kind of, I thought it was funny how it almost sounds like a prompt. And it has to do with his authority, of course. Where are we now? I see that if you know the Gartner hype cycle, this is a theory about when something new is introduced in the technological world. Everybody is first extremely excited about it. Then there's some disappointment and disillusionment, and then it sort of levels out to something that finds its own place in the world. So according to this version, generative AI is right here. It's at the hype cycle of, oh my gosh, it's so cool, it's weird, it's going to change everything, and either great or worse, we're all going to lose our jobs. But as Google Analytics shows, that the searches for words like Midjourney, that program I just showed you, or Stable Diffusion, are already on the decline. So people are not Googling about it as much anymore. The first hype is starting to fade out a little bit. What these tools have done is made it accessible to everybody just by using prompts. But it raises questions. So there are some issues. Issues. Copyright. What about images read by the machine? Was that properly agreed upon by the artist who? So if Helmontel's data has been read and used to train, if it produces something, how much of, you know, what is the relationship between that and that work? And did Helmontel approve his images being used as a training material? That's a tricky question. There's an issue there because you don't really know how much this image has influenced that image. But some artists are protesting. So there are some lawsuits going on right now in the US where basically artist groups are suing these companies because they never approved for their images to be used. If your image is already online, there's actually a website where you can check if your artwork was used to train some of them, and I checked for Helmontel and some of the images were used, so because his work is on shops online and things like that, so you can find some of his work. On the other hand, after feeding it for millions and millions, it's going to be hard to know exactly what has been used, but that's an issue. That's why certain big games companies right now are not using these tools to create stuff, because they want to stay clear of the legal discussion right now that's emerging. So that is an issue. Down the road, on the other hand, artists who teach themselves will also look at millions of artwork. Henk Helmontel went to study Rembrandt to see how he did things, so he could. So in some ways, techniques-wise, it's not weird to learn from other people's images. But if it's literally used, that raises questions. There's another one that's really interesting. It's about data bias. So let me just show you a small little movie just for a few 1 minute.
This is why you should avoid mixing Barbie with biased AI image generators. What does a typical prisoner look like? What about a lawyer? A nurse? A drug dealer? What about a fast food worker? A cleaner? A terrorist? Or a CEO? These are all images created by an artificial intelligence image generator called Midjourney, which creates unique images based off of simple word prompts. These AI image generators have exploded in popularity thanks to their impressive results and ease of use. Within a few years, as much as 90% of the images on the internet could be artificially generated. Given that generative AI will have a huge impact in shaping our visual landscape, it's important to understand that the reality it presents can often be distorted, where harmful biases relating to gender, race, age, and skin color can be more exaggerated and more extreme than in the real world.
Okay, so I think the point here is clear. Depending on what we fed the computer,
how does that affect the outcome, and how does it affect the message it's giving? So is a lawyer always a white male? Is a nurse always a woman? So those are all the questions that are... And it's basically saying if the data that you're feeding it is not rounded, or if it's representative, you can create a bias by the outcome. So it's an interesting angle, right? It means that we have to be careful as humans, basically control how it's being fed. So this is a warning also for the output of these images. Another one that I talked to Rob a little bit this summer about, does the data pool basically determine your perception? So does it basically determine your, kind of like the algorithms that we mentioned last night, Hank, it's where the algorithm of YouTube pushes you in a certain direction based on some of your interests, and then it always keeps you in that little funnel. This is where some of the conspiracy groups keep being fed more conspiracy stuff based on their search. So the algorithm actually tries to match your interests, but it means it also excludes a lot of other interests. And like you said last night, Hank, I want to know what somebody else is thinking. I want to know what other people are looking for, YouTube. But right now you're pushing me into a funnel. And it's similar with the data pool that you use to train AI. So these are concerns. I thought this was funny. I'm on several Facebook pages about this stuff. And, well, when do you know it's wrong? I kind of love this. Said everyone saying, oh, make somebody can program that can think, read, and write in human languages just like us. That would be so cool. And then engineers create software that does exactly that. Everyone, what is it? What do you mean it makes mistakes and remembers things wrong just like us? So it's kind of like sort of funny how it's sort of reflecting on us creating something that kind of works and thinks like us, and then it makes the same mistakes as well. So when is it wrong? ChatGPT is a good example. We were talking about if you, like for example, when you write scientific papers, you're supposed to have references to where the sources are from. Now, it turns out that sometimes it creates sources that weren't there, so it's tricky. There was a lawyer again who got into trouble because he referred to a case that never existed. So it was Midjourney does make ChatGPT does make stuff up. I so far have used it a lot with language because it is a language model, so it knows the English language in some ways better than I do. So I think there it's useful. But I will alter the final outcome until I like the letter that I've created. With sciences, I like this a lot of sciences. It's much more black and white outcome, so you don't really have that many interpretive things. But with other topics like psychology, which is not my field of specialty, it would be dangerous if I let it write all sorts of stuff for me about psychology unless I cross-reference it with other things. So I have to see it a little bit as a tool, but I do need to be aware of its weaknesses. Jobs. There's a lot of concern about jobs. Like, let's say in advertising, I'm sure that Midjourney and those tools, images that are used once for an ad, maybe even an ad in a newspaper or an ad on a website, stuff that's generated fast, I do think that Midjourney will take a lot of stuff there. So I think it's changing. People are not going to be hired. You know, sometimes on Saturday you have a little illustration that goes with your newspaper, right? And then these in Parole, we have Parole at Home. There will be a cool little illustration that's sort of related to the topic of the thing. Yeah, I can imagine that stuff being done by these tools rather than hiring somebody in. Somebody else put this online, which I do think is also true. It's not about AI taking your job, but somebody who understands it better than you do. Mm-hmm. And there's a point there. And it's an interesting thing. For me to analyze, it's an important point. It is hard to control output. So if I say the spaceships, I wanted to fly, but if I wanted to move the spaceships over to the left, I don't know how to do it with words.
So then I would be likely, if I'm an artist, to just take it and then cut it out in Photoshop and move it. So that's where I start. So if digital artists who are familiar with those tools are still in control more than an amateur who doesn't even know how to use Photoshop. So there's still room for expertise. There's still room for experts. I don't think it's just blindly going to replace everything, because you can't get it to do exactly what you want it to do based just on the prompts right now.
It's also probably like kind of prompt language is going to exist.
And I think there is some innovation is going to be. And I think maybe some of that prompt language is again going to be replaced by a dashboard that gives you more control. So I think there's where a lot of innovation is going to happen in the next few years. Yeah. Another raising question, what is art? You saw me create stuff really quickly. Some of that work you could produce on a poster size and hang on the wall, maybe even, you know, if we can find one that look where Schaefer does look like Schaefer and he is talking to Gandalf, and that could be a fun image. But what does that say about effort and art? And so we had a panel at a game event that we organized, and I had three artists from the game industry discuss this topic. And two of them were using AI and thought it was fun and were interested in it. And so Scott has been in the industry for 30 years, I think. Sonia is the one who drew the painting that we started the presentation with. And Thomas is a well-known game designer, artist who creates games pretty much all by himself, which is unusual. And so it was fun to hear their angle and I think Thomas said one important thing. He's against it, so he feels it's risky and that we should try and avoid it. And he says true art is the result of an artist's journey. And that's true. If your journey, if you've first of all practiced a lot to draw, and then also maybe you've had some personal things happen in your life that affects the topics and things that you choose and maybe the emotion that you communicate with your art, you can't replace that with AI. Yeah. So I'm also not worried that AI will replace work like what is here on the wall, which I always struck with these three images. It's about the first days of creation. And if I look at the white one where you see there's a certain emotion in how God created that human being, I'm not worried about that being replaced. I do think that this is going to be added somewhere in the spectrum of what we create. But I'm not worried, like the texture of that painting, if you just go over it with your hand, which you're probably not allowed to, but still, the texture of these paintings is also part of what makes it special. But we're all debating, so these three don't agree. They both use it. I chatted with Sonia a little bit, I asked Scott about it a lot. They are using it, they're playing with it. They're interested, they're not against it, but they're trying to figure out where does this work. What also interesting is some artists are feeding it their own work, because you can also feed it your own work and then have it create another version of your work with your hand, with your signature, for ideation. So in creative ideation, I do think that it's going to stay. So then I went to a few presentations on AI in Hilversum, and some of them were more focused on media in general, and one was about journalism. Journalism is a big one, because ChatGPT is, of course, very easy to use for journalists. And so there was big discussions about how to use it. All departments of newspapers and media outlets are having big discussions about what are we allowing. So some will say you can't use it at all. Some are trying to find guidelines to use it. The new generation of journalists, obviously, like you said, I've used it even for Bible study preparations and other things. But what is a good way to use it? So here's one point. The journalists should always be human, and their own identity should be preserved. Balance between the departments for printing. And the last one I found interesting, should there become a label that's called premium, which is 100% man-made? So that's an interesting comment. And he ends his presentation with, ask yourself why, and don't just It's not worthwhile just because it's possible. That's kind of what he's saying. It says also experiment. I do think that it's good to experiment with it. So I would definitely play with it. And that he also pleads for make sure, let the audience know if you've used AI and what for. So inform the audience about what you're doing as a journalist. Another presentation that same day also had the same comment. Should there be a human-made label? So if you see this coming back, this may become something like that. How do you prove that? That's another question. Yeah. That's a huge question. I happen to be involved in a startup that works with digital fingerprinting, so the hidden fingerprints that are in such a deep level that they are really hard to detect and remove, that could help a creator of an original image to protect their image somewhat against use by AI or copies. But still, this is hard to prove. And he also ended with a couple of comments. Why would you use it? Same comment as before. But just, he said, use it, see it as intelligent Lego, and use new, look for new forms. So there's a balance here. Basically, they're also struggling with it. It's gone so fast that we need to figure out what's the opportunity, what is a threat, where do we find our ways. This is where I'm at right now. I don't know exactly where it's going. It's still pretty new. And this is a comment from a leader at Electronic Arts, one of the biggest game companies in the world. They basically say, look, it's like a co-pilot. And I've heard programmers say the same thing. They say it's kind of like a buddy that I can ask questions. And I've heard that writers say that same thing. I kind of see ChatGPT certainly that way. And I think in ideation, so concept phase, I could see playing with the Legos and the commands. I think that's definitely useful. I tried to find some Christian articles on it. It's so new that there's not much written on it. I found a few articles that kind of touch base on things like this. And one guy analyzed, look, it's there's kind of two camps, one who think it should take jobs and sabotage spiritual information formation. Basically, can I trust ChatGPT to give me good feedback on sermon information or things like that? But mind you, it has been fed with all sorts of books, also theology, and also the Bible. It knows the Bible well, actually. You can ask it. No, you can ask it to summarize Corinthians 13 or Corinthians 20. Yeah, it will do it for you. Now you will have to use your own common sense, but it doesn't just create BS. It is some of it is very useful. And this guy in this article pleads for this text, and I do like that. I do think that as Christians we do need to inform ourselves. So we do need to, before we judge it, we should play with it. And, you know, I showed you a little bit of the fun side of it, which is what makes it difficult for me to completely dismiss it. At the same time, I also see some of the risks with it. But I do think that this is a good proverb to handle. Another article I found on generative AI, basically three points that I caught out of it. Stewardship of technology, basically stewardship that we have extends to everything that we do, including software and all the stuff. So this is where our responsibility lies. I do think it also has to do with autonomy, not autonomy, but with mastery. So who stays in control? I do think it's very important that humans stay in control of this technology and of these techniques. Proceed with caution, and yeah, like I said, the authority should lay with us, and I think that's very true. I have a friend who's not a Christian, but he's a coder. He understands this stuff to a much deeper level than I do. I've worked with him in the industry for 20 years, and he gave me this quote. We were texting about it, and he said, efficiency ultimately leads to a shift of creativity to a higher level. Because ultimately creativity can only arise from life, and that is what Homo sapiens adds and cannot possibly ever be captured by digital technology. And he says, I do not find this essence in any comment from thought leaders. So he's so convinced that the uniqueness of us, we are always the ones who will be really creative and bring things to a new level. And he's so convinced, well, he's a software expert. So he actually acknowledges the uniqueness that God has given us and our sort of principal, creative being. God created us in his image and he's the creator. So we've given a lot of the creative power. And for him, it's not even an issue. He just really thinks that man will always be the real creative. And I found it encouraging to hear that from someone who's not a believer, but who just kind of, looks at that way. And I kind of wanted to end with this comment. I do think it means that we need to hold on to the authority. And meanwhile, we just have to see where this goes and how this plays out. So this concludes my rant.